Hey guys, this episode of Sports Spectrum is brought to you by our friends at Water Mission, a Christian engineering nonprofit committed to providing clean and safe water and, most importantly, God's love to people around the world. You can get involved today and learn more by going to watermission.org/join the team. Watermission.org/join the team. I'm telling you, you won't regret getting involved with this amazing ministry. Clean water to people in need. Watermission.org/join the team.
Welcome into the Sports Spectrum Podcast, where we bring Jesus into the sports conversation. Here's your host for today, Jason Romano.
Hi guys, welcome to Sports Spectrum. I am Jason Romano. It's so great to have you tuned into the program today. We got one very powerful conversation coming up with Scott Spezio, the two-time World Series champion, who was an addict and is a recovering addict who had pretty much everything in his hand that you could imagine as far as an athlete's concerned. The money, the fame, the championships, and he lost pretty much all of it due to addiction after his baseball career ended. But then there's the gospel and the redemption of Scott Spezio and God using his pain for a greater purpose. And that's the part that gets me all smiley and juiced up when you hear Scott Spezio's story coming up on Sports Spectrum. First, I want to tell you about our website, sportspectrum.com. I mention it during all of our conversations, and it's because it's the home base. There's everything you want. As far as what we're putting out is right there at the website. You can find those articles on the athletes and coaches to share with someone and read right there at the website. A devotional Monday through Friday, you can read there as well and stay encouraged in your faith in God. And if you want to listen to any of our podcasts on the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network, they are all there as well at sportspectrum.com. We hope you'll visit it and check it out and then provide us with any feedback. If you want to reach us or let us know what you think about the website or the podcast or anything we have going on, our magazine, you can email me, jason@sportsspectrum.com. All right, let's get to our conversation with Scott Spezio, two-time World Series champion. He played in the big leagues from 1996 to 2007. He was a key member of that 2002 Angels World Championship team, hit a big home run in Game 6 that brought the Angels back from what looked like a certain defeat and allowed them to go on and beat the Giants and win a World Series. And then a few years later, he's with the St. Louis Cardinals, an 83-win team. 83 wins, and they went on to win the World Series. Scott had a big two-run triple in that Game 2 NLCS against the Mets, and that catapulted St. Louis to a National League title and ultimately a World Series title. Scott Spezio, two World Series rings. But like I said earlier, he's been through a lot. And he's going to share it all right now, right here on Sports Spectrum. Scott Spezio, it's so good to see you. Welcome to Sports Spectrum, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Stacey. It's going to be a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely. Your story is awesome. When I've read about what God's been doing in your life recently, it's one of redemption and one of God's grace. But I got to start with Scott Spezio, identifying who that Scott Spezio was in 1993 when he was drafted by the Oakland A's. Who do you think, if you were asked, you know, about your 18 to 20-year-old self, who was that guy? Who was Scott Spezio in 1993?
Well, if you're going to use the word identity, I definitely would say my identity was a baseball player, you know. I was a Christian, but I wasn't maybe as mature as a Christian as I am today. And so I was, you know, my dad was a major leaguer. He played 9 years in the big leagues, went to 3 World Series, won 2 with the Cardinals in 64, 67. And he retired basically when he was 30 years old. And so my whole life revolved around baseball practice. And so that was my goal my whole life. You know, every year I'd write goals on a piece of paper taped to my headboard, and that's what I was. It was what did I do today that got me closer to being a major leaguer? You know, and my prayers were all, God, keep me healthy. Let me get to the major leagues. Let me stay there for 10 years. And I always say I should ask for 20 instead of 10, but you know, but that, you know, that's who my whole life revolved around that, you know, and I, you know, I had a great family and everything, but pretty much all our talk was all about baseball all the time.
And there's good in that, because when you're so driven to be great, that allows you to get opportunities like you had to be drafted and ultimately to make the big leagues and to play 11 years. But there's also the bad side of that too, where it's consuming you and it's the only thing you think about. What were those times like for you when you got to the big leagues and kind of managing both sides of it, to be all in on baseball, but to also try to have a life outside of baseball? And maybe that wasn't possible for you. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I like you said, it's very good. I wouldn't have made the major league without my dad and everything that he taught me and him pushing me. You know, he basically said, you're either going to be valedictorian or you're going to be a major leaguer, you know? And I'm like, my sister's valedictorian, but like, I'm like, I'd rather play baseball. And so, you know, I was driven. Everything I did was baseball. And, you know, it's a tough sport. You know, you're playing 162 games a year. You're playing probably another 30 to 40 in spring training. Playoffs, you might have 15 more games. So you're looking at, you know, maybe 215, 220 games in like 260 days. You got travel all the time. You're away from your family. You know, the media, the fans of the media love you one day, they hate you the next day. And so it's a grind, you know. The minor leagues was very tough. You know, fortunately, I was only in the minor leagues for like 3.5 years. So, you know, even though it was tough, I got through it, you know, relatively quickly. And like, I look back now and say, man, how did I do that? You know, those long bus rides and everything. And, you know, but it definitely wears on you. I know, like, most of the time I always say that my God was baseball. You know, I put baseball first over everything. And I think that wore on me quite a bit for a while. And you know, I think when I got hurt, that's when I started, you know, I had time on my hands. I started, like, you know, diving into other stuff that wasn't real healthy for me. And I was pretty lucky. I got injured here and there. I had a meniscus tear my second year. You know, I got hit in the hand. I was back in 15 days from the hand. I was back in 5 weeks with the meniscus. And then when I went to Seattle, that's where things started kind of going bad. I didn't, you know, I had two great years in 2002 and 2003 with the Angels. Of course, we won the World Series. I had a great postseason with 19 RBIs and the big home run in game six. And that's, you know, like, as a Christian, I could see where things started going wrong. You know, I started, I used to read the Bible all the time on the road and at home. And then I kind of got away from it because I was getting asked to do all these things. You know, come be on this, you know, I'm in LA, come be on this show, do this with your band, And like, I started doing that and playing baseball. And those were my two things I was doing. And I got away from the spiritual life, and, you know, in Ephesians, it talks about the armor of God. And I think that's where I opened myself up to, you know, to the devil and his lies and things like that. And so, I never got hurt. I ended up signing with Seattle. I blew up my T6 and T7 disc. And they were telling me I might not play again. I might not walk again. And I started feeling bad for myself. And, I didn't have that good group of Christian guys developed yet because it was a new team, you know. So I wanted to fit in. I wanted to make, you know, I had time on my hands now. I had a lot of money and I wanted to fit in. So what did I do? I started going out to the bars, hanging out with the guys. And, you know, usually when I was playing, I wouldn't want to do that because I thought it would affect my play. But now that I wasn't playing, I'm going out, and eventually, you know, I was never a big drinker. I've never touched a drug. I didn't even see a drug till I was 33 and a half years old. I was that dare guy that used to go around talking to, you know, kids. I'd buy drug dogs. I'd do demonstrations with the drug dogs on the field, you know, with the suit and the thing on your arm, and take cards with dare cards and stuff with the dare policeman and the car and the dogs. And I you know, one thing led to another. I started drinking. I started making bad decisions. I had an affair. It ruined my marriage. And instead of, you know, stopping and turning back towards God, I had the guilt and shame. And so once I made those bad decisions, I just kept making more and more bad decisions, because I'm like, oh, I already did it now. Nobody likes me anymore. You know, I started believing the lies, and then eventually, you know, we got remarried. After like a year and a half of that relationship, I tried cocaine, and then, you know, like the first couple times I did it, it wasn't like, you know, a big deal. I thought, wow, this stuff wakes you up. It's, you know, it's not too bad after all. And then all of a sudden it just grabbed me, and it became like, in 2007, pretty much I gave up everything in my life for one or two things. One was cocaine and one was alcohol. And now I was balancing both of them. And, you know, nobody in my family had ever dealt with addiction. Nobody I really knew had dealt with addiction. So, you know, I finally went to the Cardinals, and, you know, in 2007, after all these things, you know, I got released by Seattle. I thought I might not play again. I got my career back on track. Like, I was drinking in Seattle. I wasn't using drugs yet. I didn't try cocaine until like November 2005 for the first time. And then I kind of dabbled until like the end of 2006. And then I started doing a little bit more, but it was more of a superstition thing. And then 2007 is when I started, where everything in my life was revolving around where I'm going to get my next hit, where I'm going to get my next drink. And I just, you know, I ruined everything. I ruined my new marriage. I ruined my relationship with everybody. The Cardinals couldn't, you know, I became a distraction. And, you know, it's too bad, you know. But, you know, the thing, over years of trying to beat it, you know, 12 years, I went to 12 rehabs and eventually, finally, gave it up to God and said, okay, you know, I'm not too good at this driving thing. Let's try it your way. And that's when finally things started happening. I just said, okay, I know you got a purpose for my life. You know, I know I went through this for a reason. You know, tell me what to do now. And so that's where I'm at now. And you know, now I'm out there trying to help others, you know, give others hope, trying to discourage. Last night I was talking to a local youth group. They had a banquet, and I was just, you know, I was talking about, you know, work ethic, dedication, setting goals, you know, all those things, overcoming adversity. And then I went into, you know, hey, you know what, I did all those things, and I made it. You know, I had the millions, I had the cars, I had everything that you think is a dream, you know. But I said, you know, my priorities are messed up, and I said, you know, I talked about my faith and how that got through. And so I said, listen, you guys, you can't try these drugs now. You know, these things are killers. You know, I was lucky. I'm a miracle, because, you know, if they had this, you know, what's the fentanyl, when I was coming around, like, I'd be dead over, you know, hundreds of thousands of times probably. And so I, you know, I try to tell people, you know, stay away from it. It could kill you in one try now, even if it's a prescription drug, you think it is, you know, it could be a counterfeit drug. And then I say, but if you do end up finding yourself in a situation where, you know, you feel hopeless, it's never too late. You know, as long as you got a breath, as long as you got a pen, you can always write a good ending, and you can repair broken relationships, and you can what I call invest in others. And I think, you know, as I've grown, that's the thing that I've see that's most important in the world, is you know, not what you do or what, how much money you make or what you do in life. It's what kind of impact did you make in others' lives, you know? So that's what I'm kind of focused on now.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, Scott. I'm glad you shared so much of it. Let me ask you this. You said you kind of grew up as a Christian or had faith in your life. What was that like? So was there a moment when you were younger when you kind of said, yes, God, I'm in, I accept you as my Lord and Savior? And was faith kind of there? Like you said, it wasn't being all in like you are now, but was faith always, you know, a part of your childhood and growing up into those years when you got to the majors?
Yeah. So my dad and his mom were strict Roman Catholics, and so I always make a joke that say I was drugged as a kid, drugged to church every Sunday.
I understand.
You know, I had CCD every Wednesday, and so I was exposed to church. It kind of became like rote memory for me, like remember all the prayers, remember all the things I was supposed to say. I didn't develop like this really close personal relationship with Jesus. You know, I felt like I got to follow all the rules. Like I got to know the Ten Commandments, but I can't break them. And if I do, I got to, you know, confess right away.
Yeah, be a good person, right?
Be a good person. And so that's what I focused on, you know, like, I don't want to go to, you know, I don't want to go to hell, which is good. None of us want to do that. But I didn't really understand the personal relationship thing. And it wasn't until I got to college with a Fellowship of Christian Athletes and Baseball Chapel, where I started, you know, they kept saying, hey, if if you're questioning, if you're saved or not, you know, recite this prayer with me. And I'm like, well, I wonder if I am saved. I wonder if I, you know, I believe in Jesus and I believe in all that stuff. And so then I started saying it, you know, and I kept saying it over and over. I just kept saying it. I want to make sure that I'm saved. And I've really felt in my heart, like this is the direction that I need to go and pursue that personal relationship. And so, you know, through my college career, I kept, you know, being involved. As I went into minor leagues, my one of my first stops was Modesto, California, and I actually was hosted. My host family, he was the baseball chaplain, so oh, wow. We'd have Bible studies and go to schools and talk, and then afterwards we might have a pizza party, and I'd, you know, share my testimony, like I just told you about. You know, that reciting that, you know, Lord Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior, you know, he died for my sins and rose from the dead. And so, you know, I kept sharing, and I did that all the way through with the A's. I had a great relationship with Donnie Moore, our chaplain there, and then Chuck Obremski with the Angels. The one problem was I was a Christian, but I still wasn't putting God first.
Right.
You know,
there's a big difference.
I still, he was there when I needed him. Like, okay, God, I need a hit. You know, okay, God.
He was your genie.
He was my genie. He was my foxhole prayers. You know, I would thank him all the time too. But, you know, and I was given my tithes, you know, I was given money. And that's something I noticed too. Like when I give my 10%, you know, to the church or the charities, you know, like God just kept giving me more money, and it wasn't like I needed it. It was, you know, he'd blessed me with a great year, and he'd, you know, a great contract, and I never really thought about it. And then, you know, later, as I, you know, I told you I went to Seattle, I didn't have like those, like core group of guys like David Eckstein, Tim Salmon, Garrett Anderson, Orlando Palmeiro, Benji Molina, where we'd have Bible studies on the road and stuff. And, you know, if a guy felt tempted, we'd go to the room and have, you know, read the Bible and things like that. And so, you know, when I went to Seattle, that's when, you know, I got away from everything. And I feel the devil attacks me. You know, I feel, and that's another thing. Like, I don't know if this is getting too crazy, but, you know, I felt like I didn't really believe that the devil was pursuing me. I felt like you know, as long as you're a good person, you know, the devil will leave you alone. You know, if you mess up and you go to hell, then you'll see him. But as long as you're good, you won't see him. Well, my dad ended up giving me a book by Dr. Charles Stanley. It was called When the Enemy Strikes. And I started reading it. You know, this was after, you know, I kind of went down the hill and I was already into, you know, cocaine and alcohol. And I started realizing, reading it, and I'm realizing, man, that, you know, with my platform where I was and the people that I was reaching, that's an opportune time for the devil to come after me and try to, you know, knock me out from that platform. And I realized that the devil will get you, will pursue you a lot of times when you're at the top, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I remember, we'll just, you know, just the was it the Oscars, when Will Smith came and slapped Chris Rock, you know, and when he went up to do a speech, he said that Denzel Washington said, "Watch out, when you're at the top is when the devil will come after you." And I think that's what happened to me. It was like right after World Series, I started losing focus. But, you know, the great thing is, and you talk about redemption, is, you know, in order for me to come back on my feet, I just had to basically turn away from the sin and turn towards him. And he was always there. He's just waiting for me. It's the same with my dad. I mean, the whole prodigal son thing, you know, he was just waiting for me to snap out of it and turn towards him. And then once I did, you know, everybody, my true friends, my family, and most of all, God was right there waiting for me. He was kind of like that footprint in the sand. You know, he was carrying me for a long time, and I was heavy, you know, but he still did it. And, you know, I'm so grateful for it.
Scott Spezio is our guest here on Sports Spectrum. I think what really, I told you before we started recording, what initially drew me to you being a guest was because I'm a Mets fan and have been since 1983. And I said, wait a minute, I was at the Scott Spezio Cardinals moment in 2006 in game two of the NLCS when he broke my heart and 56,000 other hearts of the Mets fans with this two-run double that was kind of a triple and really put the game back in the Cardinals' hands. And then they went on and won it, you know, in the ninth inning and ultimately win the World Series, win the National Championship Series, National League Championship Series, and ultimately the World Series. And I always said that 06 Mets team was one of my favorite teams that never did win at all because they had so much talent on both sides. That lineup was fierce. So I saw that and I'm like, all right, I want to talk to Scott Spezio, you know, assuming you were a believer. But then I read your story and I hear about your redemption and, you know, your addictions. And that's near and dear to my heart as someone who grew up with a dad who just could not stay sober for years and years and years. And it destroyed himself. It destroyed his job. It destroyed two marriages. It destroyed his relationship with his kids for so many years. And he's sober now. So I'm glad to hear that, just like you are. But I'm really curious to dive into that aspect. Like, when you were going through your lowest moments, maybe first of all, what was your lowest moment? But what were those moments like with family? Because I had to distance myself from my dad as I started getting older. And as much as I loved him because he was my dad, I hated the person that he had become. And I had to separate myself. And it took a while for me to forgive my father and to even reconcile with him. Thankfully, we're there now. What were those dynamics like for you as you're in your really low points and, you know, with your kids and with your family members? Thankfully, it sounds like everybody's back in good graces with you. But what were those difficult seasons like for you, those very difficult, dark times?
Yeah. So you asked, like, what was the lowest? I mean, each time, like, I went to rehab and things, I thought I was the lowest, but it seemed like I just kept getting lower and lower. And that's the case with a lot of alcoholics and addicts is, you know, you think you're at rock bottom and then you start getting sober and then you go, you know, you fall off the wagon again and you even go deeper usually. So, you know, we were such a close-knit family, you know, and divorce wasn't a thing in our family. And so when I started making bad decisions and they knew who I started dating and, you know, and went through my divorce, they knew that I wasn't the same person because I was drinking a lot. Now I was drinking more, at first I was drinking to fit in, then it became I was drinking because I felt guilty, and I didn't want to feel that pain, and I wanted to like justify my decisions. So it was easier to do that when I was drunk, you know. And so, you know, I wasn't doing it, you know, during the games or before games or anything, but after games I was, boom, I was into it, you know. And so my family, all, you know, my kids were still young, but you know, my dad, he just basically said, hey, we'll be here when you need us, you know, but right now we can't watch just the self-destruct. And, you know, my kids were the same way, you know, a lot of times, and then once I started getting the drugs, I wouldn't fulfill my obligations. So like, if I had my kids, sometimes I'd be like, okay, I'm going to be there. And then I, you know, show up 15 minutes late, or I'd say, I just can't do it, you know? And then there's times where I didn't want them to see me like that. So I wouldn't leave my place, you know? And so, you know, my health was not great. You know, I really didn't do much. I isolated a lot because I didn't want people to see me. You know, at one point, you know, my oldest son started calling me Scott because he didn't want to call me dad anymore.
Wow.
You know,
I did the same thing. Scott, I did the same thing with my dad. I would call him Joe instead of dad because I felt the same way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I knew what he was doing, you know, and I thought I was hiding it from him. You know, I'd have a little cup with vodka and Gatorade, and he'd be like, wow, you're still getting a lot of use of that cup, you know? I'd be like, yeah, you know, and you know, I'm thinking I'm hiding it from everybody, and I'm not, you know, and it just got worse and worse. You know, I'm really lucky I never hurt anybody with a DUI, because I was constantly intoxicated. I just thought it was normal to survive, because if I didn't, I'd shake. And so, you know, I'd say probably the worst part was around 5 years ago. Well, it would have been April 5th. 2018.
Wow. 5 years.
I'd stopped the drugs, but I was still drinking. I mean, there was times I would drink two handles of vodka a day, which is unbelievable. And you know, I get the doctor saying, hey, you know, your liver enzymes are elevated. So I'd stop, you know, and then it would recover. And this time, like, I went yellow. Like, I had all these pains. Like, I had pains in my back, and I thought that it was my disc, you know, and you know, like my knees and everything. So I got an MRI in my back, and when I got out, like, my eyes were yellow, my whole body was yellow. Like, in 24 hours I just went yellow, and it was, you know, my liver, basically. And I always used to joke, like, my liver is evil, it needs to be punished, or you know, I've got too much blood in my alcohol system, you know, stupid things like that. Well, my liver wasn't messing around this time. And so I would say that was like the lowest. And when I went in to, you know, see the doctor and stuff, they're like, you know, you got a 20% chance to live here. You know, you better make a change. And that's, you know, I just started praying to God, like, take away my addiction, take away my cravings, basically. Because each time I stopped in the past, I might go 8 months, 9 months, things like that. And this time I had no cravings whatsoever. And that was another miracle, you know. But once, you know, I'd say, you know, when my dad went and started meeting with therapists and counselors and realized that this was a life or death situation, he tried to help as much as he could. You know, I had turned over the little amounts of money that I didn't spend, you know, or waste, and gave him power of attorney on my property, which he ended up saving for me, thank God, because I probably would have sold it and spent all the money. But I was at least smart enough to do that. And, you know, they sacrificed so much for me. You know, I couldn't have done it without my parents and my sister's help. And my kids were always, even when they didn't really see me as the person that they knew who I, you know, that I was, they still were there for me. And then as they saw me coming out of it and saw my attitude change and my whole outlook on life change, then it started coming back. And you know, and we had open and honest conversations about stuff, and we still do. And, you know, it just, it keeps, we keep getting closer and closer, you know. And, you know, when my kids start telling me they love me, you know, all the time and texting me and stuff. And then I was like, you know, and then I kept telling my dad, and they kept telling me, and, you know, and now it's every time we see each other, it's, I love you, I love you, I love you. You know, it's like, I don't hang up the phone without saying I love you, because, you know, I was so close to death. And now, you know, I feel like I've got a new life. You know, God gave me a second chance, and now, you know, I want to help others. So that's, it's a great story, you know?
Oh, I love it. I think it's an amazing story. I think it's the gospel, if I'm being honest. Like, when you read the gospel, it's about, you know, God sending his son to die for you and I, because we were broken and lost without him, and redeeming us to the Father. And your story is being redeemed both physically and getting healthy again, but also being redeemed spiritually. When you think about who Jesus is to you now, who he is to you today, as we release this in 2023, who is Christ today to you versus maybe that Christ that you didn't really know really well, you know, when you were younger?
Yeah. I did a study, and I just finished a discipleship, a 48-week discipleship. And it's because I did the study called Not a Fan.
Yes.
And it's basically a whole thing about
Kyle Eidelman, right? Is the guy?
That's exactly it.
Yes.
Yep. And it, you know, it kind of opened my eyes. Like, what are we living for? Are we living, like, looking at Jesus and saying, "Wow, what a great guy! Like, you know, I want to be like him." Or are we actually, you know, like the disciples and putting down everything in our lives and following him? And so I think that's the, for me, he's the guy that he's my God, but while he was here on earth, he's a man I wanted to emulate, you know, and his whole message of, loving your Lord thy God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and loving your neighbor as yourself. Like, that's who I want to be. And I don't want to be that guy that, you know, always mad at the world, you know, holding hate in my heart. But mostly my thing with Jesus, I want to follow him, and I want to try to help others to follow him as well. And that's what his last message was, you know, like, go to the ends of the earth and share the good news. And so that's what I feel my role is to follow him completely and to put him first and foremost. I got the armband that I wear all the time. I am second.
Yeah.
You know, he is everything to me. And you know, I'm not the perfect Christian. None of us are. You know, you can look at the stories in the Bible, you know, David, Moses, you know, all these major figures in the Bible have done some pretty bad things.
Oh yeah. Very flawed humans.
Yes. And, you know, Paul, you know,
yes,
he was killing, you know, torturing Christians, and, you know, wrote most of the New Testament. And so I just say, you know, if God, you know, used them in ways that, you know, Moses, you know, like a lot of these figures, you would never think a guy like David, who was a shepherd boy, would kill a giant and then become king, you know, king of Israel. You know, they used them in such amazing ways. I said, if he can use them, he can use me. And it's just, the biggest thing is, you got to get out of his way. My problem was, I was always messing his direction and his purpose up. And so I've taken a lot more time now to pray, but also to listen and to ask him to help me make huge decisions and things like that.
2018 is only 5 years ago when you were at your lowest point. How quickly did you realize that God wanted to use you to tell people about him? Because there's something that when you're going through it, that's one thing, and you're trying to recover and get sober and get healthy and grow closer to God. It's another thing to then go share that, to share your story of redemption, which I think is a powerful one. You mentioned sharing it last night as we're recording this. At what point are you realizing this is where God wanted you to go, to tell your story to others?
Yeah, so it's crystal clear. I've been feeling him pulling on me, but in the past, I had gotten to a year sober and fallen. And so I wanted to make sure that I, you know, one, I wasn't having cravings. I knew that my goals were to, you know, just do something positive a little bit each day. I call it picking up sticks because I live on 50 acres here. And in order to, for a long time, I wouldn't mow the grass or nothing because I didn't want to go up and pick up the sticks and lawn and stuff. So like I started, you know, when I was healing, going out and just picking up sticks. And then, you know, then I'd have a wheelbarrow and then I have a burn pile and then I'd start trimming the trees and then I could mow the grass, you know? So I kept it real simple. And then when I got, on my year anniversary, I went and saw Brian Head Welch, who is the guitar player for Korn, with his daughter speak at a church up in like Homer Glen, Illinois, which is about 45 minutes from me. And I heard him and his daughter talk, and they talked about similar things, you know, addiction, their relationship, you know, and then her addiction and her, him having to bring her into a substance abuse place where she had to go and live and her not want to. And then seeing their relationship, you know, come together, and now they're both powerful people and, you know, and sharing their story and fighting addiction. They actually put out a movie, I think called like Crazy Love or something like Loud Crazy Love, I think is what it was. And so I was never on social media. I kind of, you know, would stay in the background. And after seeing them, I joined Facebook and I decided that I was going to make a post about my 1 year of sobriety and seeing Brian Head Welch and how, you know, how God was involved in my life. And that's, I think, the first step. Where, and then I saw people reaching out and, you know, direct messaging me saying, you know, they have an issue. And I realized, wow, I could help people not only spiritually, but, you know, getting sober or, you know, staying sober. And so that kind of started right then. And it just got bigger and bigger. And as, you know, I was always worried about, I'm not the greatest public speaker, but I realized that, you know, and I look to Moses. Moses, you know, he didn't want to speak. You know, he's like, let Aaron speak.
Yeah, you know? Somebody else. That's right.
Right. And God did that with a lot of people. You know, like, I'm not a warrior. Okay, yeah, well, you're going to be a warrior. You know, and you're going to be a great leader. You know, and so I had to really like God, you know, believe that God would give me the words to say. And so, as I became more vulnerable and shared my story and, you know, didn't sugarcoat things, I think it touched a lot more people. It made it more authentic to people. And I just relied on God to give me the right words to say that, you know, will reach people. And, you know, I've had a lot of people now that have, you know, a year, 2 years sobriety that I've helped. I've had a lot of people that have reached out that now go to church with me and are involved in life groups, and I lead a life group now on Monday nights, and I just finished my 48-week discipleship, and now I'm going to go out and disciple. I'm going to start discipling two others now, and then hopefully they'll go disciple two others, and so on and so forth. And so, yeah, God, it's all God. Like, I have really nothing to do with it. He just tells me what to do, and nudges me. Like, you know, a few years ago, I did a program called Rooted, and the church kept talking about it. And I went and managed the team. And then at the end, you know, I was making all these excuses. I said, I'm just putting everything down and doing this Rooted. And that really helped me grow as a Christian. And then right away, I started being involved in the men's group. And then I started leading the group. And then it just kind of avalanched. And you know, now I've been speaking to schools and speaking at Fellowship of Christian Athletes meetings. And yesterday I spoke at a youth group. It was for football.
That's fine.
I said is, why am I here? Why they invite a guy that, you know, I said, it's probably because I look like a lineman now. You know, I'm 290 pounds. You know, I got, you know, bad knees and bad hips, you know, but I had fun with it, and but it's all God. He's the one that gives me the words to say, and I think he's the one that will touch other people's heart, and then they'll ask me, hey, you know, what's the next step? Or I've had people call me about their sons or about their dads or about their relatives. I've had people that have no idea who they are, basically just text me. I saw your story in St. Louis the other day. My nephew's in trouble. What should I do? You know, and then 2 days later, he's in rehab and they're giving me a play-by-play. And then I'm talking to him, you know, telling him he needs to stay there and this is what you need to focus on. And, you know,
that's crazy. So, that's incredible, my man. Can you imagine when you were going through your lowest moments that God would use that to help someone else in their lowest moment? You're probably not even thinking about that.
No, I'm just thinking about surviving.
Right, hoping for the next day. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of time, like, no joke. Like, I would write, they weren't suicide notes, but they were notes basically saying, if I die, like, I didn't do it on purpose, but I want to tell everybody, you know, this is awful. This is hell. Like, I'm so sorry. You know, tell my kids I love them. Like, you want to talk about low points. Like, I did that many times, you know, and, you know, I just, I prayed, please help me stop. Please help me stop. But, you know, I never, you know, it's one thing to pray and God does amazing things, but you got to show some initiative too, you know, and, you know, I just never went. The thing is, every time I'd say, okay, save me, he would save me. But then I would always take the reins back, you know, and that's what I had to learn not to do this time is, you know, say those foxhole prayers, he saves you. And then, okay, I got it now,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's amazing how God can use the lowest points in your life for his purpose and his glory. And he does that over and over and over if you let him.
Yeah, there's a lot of examples too, unfortunately examples. And one, like my friend Daryl Strawberry comes to mind, somebody who's just was at the lowest point, a lot like you, and God got a hold of him and now he's out preaching the gospel. And just talked to Jason Grimsley recently, a former pitcher who, you know, hit his lowest point and God got a hold of him and he's been able to be restored. And to me, those are my favorite stories. It's wonderful to talk to someone who's been, you know, sober and had like 20-year careers and never had any rock bottoms or any bad moments. But I feel like God is in the redemption business and that's where he does his greatest work. And can he use a Daryl Strawberry or a Jason Grimsley or a Scott Spezio? Heck yes. In fact, that's probably the people that he wants to use the most. And oh, by the way, you do have two World Series championships, so you can flash those rings around occasionally and say, hey, you might pay attention to me because of these, but let me tell you what God is really about here. And that's my favorite part of all these stories, Scott. So listening to you share your story has been an encouragement to me. Let me ask you one baseball question before we go. How much money do you think you could make a year if you were playing baseball in 2023? I mean, is it 20, 25 million? Who knows, right?
That's exactly what I think, because I was looking at numbers and WAR and stuff from like 2002, 2003. And I think my average for those 2 years would have been around 275. I had 82 and 83 RBIs, so I had 165 RBIs in those 2 years, and right at like 30 home runs, probably 350, 360 on base percentage. I only had four errors in those 2 years at first base, so I think I would have been around 22-25 million a year. And it's crazy to think.
What these guys are getting now, and listen, I never fault the players. I've learned this the older I've gotten. The players should get whatever they can get. And as a Mets fan, you know, with all the signings the Mets have made and the money that they've spent, hey, it's not my money. If the owner wants to spend it, great. But, you know, from a fan's perspective, you say, wow, if this guy's getting this much money and getting contracted all the way to his, like, age 42 season, what could a Scott Spezio have gotten, you know, in that age 30 year if this was today's game? A lot, I think.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I looked at Cody Bellinger. The last 2 years, he had 193 with a 253 on base percentage. And 2020 wasn't that great. I know he had the great years before that, but, you know, it's kind of like, what have you done for me lately? You know?
But he got 18 million, I think, this year.
He got 17.5 million. So. I'm looking like, I was looking at the American League leaders this year. And I think the top like five, like as far as RBIs, it was like, you know, Judge, you know, Alvarez, it was like, you know, whatever, 130, 120, 106, 101, 97 or something like that. And then I think back to our 2000 team with the Angels. We had five guys with 97 RBIs or more. Darren Erstad had 100 RBIs as our leadoff hitter, hit 355. We had four guys with 34 home runs or more. You know, so our team would have been the American League leaderboard, you know, like, and it just boggles my mind, like, some of the averages and the strikeouts and the on-base percentage as well, you know, and even the home runs are not like, I mean, it's not like, you know, especially when they change the ball, you know, I think the ball is juiced a little bit. I would love to be playing with the small strike zone and the juice balls.
Yes.
And that kind of money, man. I think I can make quite a bit nowadays.
Yeah, now. And your perspective would be different because you want to turn around and use that money in a different way than probably what you did when you were playing back, you know, 20 years ago. So
absolutely. Anyways,
that's
absolutely
awesome. Well, Scott, listen, your story is wonderful, buddy. I'm glad you came on. I'm glad you shared it. I hope you keep sharing it. If people are listening to this and want to bring you in to share your story, I'll have them contact me at Sports Spectrum, jason@sportsspectrum.com. I'll connect them to you. But do you have a website or anything, you know, public that they can follow along or watch along with you? You said you had a Facebook page, I think you said.
Yeah, I have a Facebook page. You'll be able to tell it's mine. It's a father of four.
Yeah.
If you direct message me, I'll even, check it when I'm not friends with you.
Yeah.
And then I have a Spezio Baseball Facebook page that you can also send messages to. Anybody can send messages to that. I can give my email, ScottSpezio, number7@gmail.com.
Okay.
And Spezio spelled Spiezio. So ScottSpezio with the number7@gmail.com. If they contact you and want to contact me, that'd be great too.
Yeah, I'll let them know. You're based in Illinois, right? That's where you're living?
Yep.
Yep.
I'm 60 miles southwest of Chicago. I went down and spoke in St. Louis. There's a potential for me to go up to Rockford. You know, I go up to Chicago. So I'll travel, you know. I mean, if it makes sense, I'll go anywhere.
How many how many days sober now? Do you have a days? Are you counting the days or is it more months or years at this point?
Yeah, so, well, it's over 4.5 years now.
So almost five.
I used to do it by months and so now I kind of do it by like, you know, four and a half, five.
Yeah, that's good. Know? Well, almost 5 years. My dad will be 10 years in June, 2013 was when he got sober, and now 2023 coming up. So
that's awesome.
Your story, his story, they always encourage me, my friend, because I know it wasn't easy for many years. So great to connect with you. All the best. And let's stay in touch. Let me know if I can ever serve you.
I appreciate it, Jason. It was a lot of fun talking with you. And hopefully we can help some people out there and just let people know that it's never too late and there's always hope.
That's it. Thanks, Scott.
All right, man. Thank you.
And super grateful to Scott Spezio for coming on our show and sharing his story here on Sports Spectrum. He's got a powerful story. And like I said at the very end of our interview, I hope he continues to share it and tell others about it because it's an important one. You know, when you're at the lowest of lows and you got no hope at all, and then suddenly 5 years later, you're sober and you're out there being able to share about the love of Christ, the grace, the mercy of Jesus, and what the gospel, the redemption story of the gospel, and how that's working and manifesting itself in Scott Spezio's life is so wonderful to see. I hope he continues to tell that story, and we're grateful that he decided to tell it with us today on Sports Spectrum. It's great to think about baseball right around the corner, the excitement of another season coming up, and just excited to have baseball back and to know that a guy like Scott Spezio is out there sharing his baseball and his Jesus story with everyone. So all the best to Scott. We'll continue to pray for him and appreciate him being here on the show. We appreciate you as well. Always appreciate you for tuning in, for believing in what we're doing, and for sharing what we do with others. The intersection of sports and faith. If you're a sports fan who loves Jesus, this is the place to go. And really what we want to be is a resource, a vehicle, an outlet for you to be able to tell others about the saving grace that's found only in a relationship with Jesus Christ. We're just using sports to get to that point. You can use anything to point to Jesus. Well, we're using sports, and hopefully you see it as a resource to be able to share the gospel or open up a conversation about God with other people. And so we love you guys, and we thank you for your support. Make sure you click that subscribe or follow button on whatever app you're listening to this podcast on so that you don't miss any more conversations like today's with Scott Spezio. And then tune in next time for another episode right here on Sports Spectrum. Have a great rest of your day. We love you guys, and we'll see you soon.